Chandra Kirti, in this Madhyamika Avatara, says that all the shortcomings and faults in the form of afflictive emotions arise from the view of grasping towards psychophysical aggregates. And by seeing this, you should realize that it is this self which is the focus of this grasping of the psychophysical aggregate, and therefore a yogi or a practitioner should try to eliminate such grasping of the self. So the root cause of all the afflictive emotion has been taught as the ignorance, or ignorance has been identified as the root cause of all types of afflictive emotions. And therefore, the negative actions arise from afflictive emotions, and afflictive emotions have their root in self-grasping, and therefore it is important to eradicate self-grasping. And once you are able to gain control over self-grasping and afflictive emotions, then you achieve freedom in the form of having achieved liberation, and that is the way to get permanent happiness. And as a method to achieve such a state of liberation, and particularly if you want, if you undertake the practice of development of bodhicitta, then not only you will actualize liberation, but you will actualize enlightenment or Buddhahood. And today, fortunately, we have found this precious human life and met with the teachings of the Buddha, which is in fact a complete teaching of the Buddha that entails both the Sutra and Tantra. And having found such a wonderful opportunity, there is an opportunity to undertake a practice which is relevant to one's own mental dispositions and one's capacity. And therefore, right in the beginning, it's extremely important to gain some idea about the whole process of the teaching. And therefore, it is important to gain some idea about the whole process of the stages of the path. And then in terms of actual development of experience, then you should emphasize on the respective subject on which you are meditating. So it is by gaining complete understanding and insight about the whole process of teaching, then it will be much more powerful when you undertake the actual practice. For example, if you were to travel from here to Delhi, and of course, when you travel from here to New Delhi, then you have to pass through many places like Pathankot and so on. However, right from the beginning, if you have a clear idea about the whole path that goes to Delhi, then it will be much easier when you actually do the traveling. So similarly, the complete sutric and tantric teachings that are at our disposal shows the whole path. And so irrespective of how much you are able to understand, at least you should gain some insight about the whole process or the complete process of the teaching. And therefore, the teaching, in order to understand the teaching that you are going to practice, it is important first of all to hear and then think and meditate. And without making such an effort of studying the text, it is difficult to gain good experience simply by expecting something in the form of blessing from the Lama. And in an exceptional case, if the Lama is fully qualified and the student is also fully qualified, and on top of that, if there is a very special karmic connection and have left positive imprints in the past, Then because of such facilitating factors, when the Lama gives certain teachings and blessings, then because all the factors are necessary, with all the necessary factors are present within your mind, then it is possible to get the positive imprints activated and you are able to cultivate necessary experiences and realizations. Whereas in the case of ordinary people like us, it is extremely important to practice the spiritual path stage by stage, and in all the four Tibetan Buddhist schools of thought, countless masters have composed and give many teachings, and you can basically categorize these into two sections. One kind of teaching which is done in accordance with the general process of the teaching of the Buddha, and then there is another section of teaching and instruction, like the verses taught by Saraha and other highly accomplished masters. So some of these instructions are taught towards the benefit of an individual person. But then if you read teachings like those by Nagarjuna and so on, these teachings are done keeping in mind the importance of the general process of the teaching, and therefore for us, generally speaking, it is important to follow the general process of the teaching, and based on that, then you might be able to get some benefit if you undertake certain practices of those teachings which are given to specific individual practitioners. So without such foundation and understanding of the general process of the teaching, it will be difficult to get an over idea by reading some of those texts, some of those small texts which were given primarily for the sake of specific individuals. And of course, generally, as I was saying, it is possible that in certain cases, because of the necessary qualification of the student as well as the qualification of the teacher, sometimes it is possible that one is able to develop certain realizations and experiences. But then there is also the danger of falling into certain wrong understandings if you do not have the general understanding of the general process of the teaching, and therefore it is extremely important to study the teaching and to understand the teaching in its entirety, and particularly in order to understand the tantric teaching, it is important to first of all have a good understanding of the sutric teachings. And as you will all know, that all these higher tantric teachings are given, taking it for granted that these teachings are relevant for those people who have already undertaken some practice and study of the common preliminary practices. So without such common preliminary practices, without such sutric knowledge, if you simply try to overreach certain tantric practices and follow it, then you will be undertaking certain partial practice. And in the past, Tibetans used to rush after tantric teachings, thinking that these are high teachings. And these days, our Western friends also rush after tantric teachings and initiations. So it's important to know that you won't get much benefit unless you have laid solid foundations. We are reading verse 17. The verse 17 says that in the case of some people, so the verse 17 is actually saying that if you are habituated within certain practices, then you will be able to develop a very powerful practice of patience. And so verse 17 reads that in the case of some people, when they see the blood of other people, they get even encouraged. And whereas in the case of some others, when they see the blood of other people, they faint and fall. So this is due to the differences of the strength and the spirit of the mind, whether you are courageous or whether you are timid. So therefore, when you intentionally face some of the harms and difficulties, then none of these sufferings will be able to harm you and make you suffer. And verse 19 says that in the case of a wise person, even when sufferings arise, his mind does not get unclear or defiled, because he clearly realizes that when you wage a war with afflictive emotions, then naturally there will be a lot of difficulties and hardships. And here one should also know that when you try to fight against those afflictive emotions with which you are familiar for a long time, naturally it will not be easy. Naturally you will have to face a lot of hardships. So as we have read earlier, that when you wage such a war against afflictive emotions, you should adopt various types of methods and techniques, and you should be skillful in that, and you should be wise, and make sure that such afflictive emotions do not get your mind disturbed. And naturally, when you hear bad news or bad words, or when you physically get sickness, naturally you will get some disturbance of the mind, you will get some problems. But on those occasions, it is really important to make sure that the mind is not disturbed in its depth. So I should take some method to ensure that the disturbance is only at the superficial level of the mind and not in the deep state of the mind. And there is a Tibetan saying which says that if you hear a bad news, then you hear it from one ear and send it out from the another ear. So whenever you encounter some problems or hardships, if you welcome them, or at least you recognize the fact that such sufferings are possible because you are within the samsara and you have not removed the afflictive emotion and so on, then because of this attitude, even though at the surface of the mind there will be some disturbance, but in the deep depth of the mind, in the deep state of the mind, there will be no disturbance. So then you will be able to remain like a big ocean. You will see waves coming and going on the surface, but deep down in the ocean it is not turbulent, it is not disturbed. So, but in the case of a very shallow water, then as soon as some disturbance happens on the surface, it also will get turbid and turbulent in the depth also. So therefore, when we encounter certain hardships and problems, it is important to maintain the right mental attitude. And when you encounter such hardships and problems, you should be able to see the possibilities of such things, and you should be able to face it. Now here I'm not saying that such problems and difficulties are good and you must invite them. I'm not saying that. But what is important is do not immediately get discouraged. So in the case of some of my friends from the West, I have seen some of these people, when they get some good news, they get too excited and they almost explode. And when they get some bad news, they get too discouraged. They will almost disappear or sunk into the earth. Now, whereas there are some people who even they, when they encounter some misfortunes, they try to avert and try to change the misfortunes, and at the same time they still remain very steady. So that is the way we should do. And as is said in this text, that when you wage a war against the afflictive emotions, it is but natural there will be a lot of harms. Verse 20. So in this way, when you face all these sufferings, and in this way, if you are able to destroy afflict emotions like hatred and so on, then then you are really a brave person. You are a real hero. And in the other cases, if you wage a war and kill ordinary enemies, then this is really nothing surprising, nothing amazing. And this is really like killing a dead body, someone who is already susceptible to death. And since waging war against the afflict emotion is really difficult, and therefore if you are able to develop certain antidotes, and if you are able to confront them and reduce the intensity of hatred and so on. And of course there are many reasons to remove resentment, and right from the beginning we'll be able to see that. And then it will be more difficult to remove anger. So when anger arises, it is important to make sure that your mind is not influenced by anger. And then gradually, with the passage of time, you will be able to definitely reduce the anger. And as a result of such practice, you will also be able to strengthen the practice of patience, which are antidotes to anger. And therefore, if you are really able to destroy such afflict emotions, then you are a real brave person. And even in the case of an ordinary enemy, when there is a disagreement and conflict, what is really important is to remain relaxed and to maintain far-sightedness and openness of the mind, and to go to the enemy and talk to them and to find out how to solve the problem through understanding, dialogue and negotiation. So whether it's a conflict within the family or among different people or among different members of the society, or it's a war or conflict among different nations, at that time I think the only solution is dialogue, discussion with the spirit of reconciliation. I think that is the only way to achieve long-lasting peace and happiness, because such a process of solving the problem is not only beneficial to others, but in the long run also there is the only course that will ensure happiness and peace within oneself. So that should be the way to dissolve conflict, disagreement. And if you are able to remove such conflicts and disagreement in this way, then that is genuine victory. Contrarily, if you try to eliminate others through fighting and through waging a war, then this is really like killing a dead body. Because here what you are trying, what is important is to gain victory over the mind of other people, to bring about agreement through discussion and dialogue. So without being able to change the attitude of the person, if you just use force and kill your enemy, then this is really like killing a dead person, a dead body. Additionally, there are many qualities of suffering, and when you suffer, then you get discouraged. And when you, so what is being said here is Shantideva is saying that normally when you hear problems and sufferings, immediately you get very discouraged. So he's saying that you should not act like that, because there are certain qualities with afflict emotions. For example, when you get discouraged, then that will help dispel pride and arrogance. And also when you suffer, you are also able to understand the sufferings of other sentient beings who are wandering within the samsara, and therefore you are able to develop compassion towards those other beings who are wandering within the samsara. And you will also be able to see that these sufferings are products of negative deeds and afflict emotions. So therefore you will restrain negative deeds, and you will also realize that you can reduce these sufferings by accumulating merit, and therefore you will appreciate performing virtuous deeds. Verse 22. And also, normally when we encounter certain sufferings, for example in the case of physical sufferings, when you suffer from jaundice, and develop certain sufferings, then you do not get angry towards jaundice, which is the source of suffering. This being the case, why is it that you get angry towards sentient beings who possess the mind? Because the real source of suffering is your own afflictive emotions and your own body, but we do not see our own afflictive emotions and our own body as the cause of suffering, but you always pinpoint towards someone else and blame someone else as the source of suffering. And even the so-called enemies, they are enemies of you today because of certain factors and conditions, and they were not big enemies from beginningless time, and therefore there is no definiteness and certainty in terms of your friends and relatives, and therefore all these are due to certain factors and causes. Now, for example, in our own case, even though we do not, for example, when we get physical suffering, mental unhappiness, we do not get these problems because we like them, and without liking them, while disliking them, we get physical sickness, mental unhappiness. So many of these sickness come to us because of certain factors, even though we do not want them. So similarly, while we dislike it, the afflictive emotions. Now, generally speaking, for example, if someone is very angry, even in that case, I do not think that he intentionally tried to become angry, but he became angry because of his strong habituation with afflictive emotions and because of presence of certain causal factors. So similarly, these afflictive emotions arise because of certain factors, even though you do not want. Verse 24, even though you do not think that today I will become angry and I will fight with everybody. So people do not develop such a motivation, but naturally people get angry because of certain factors. And similarly, you do not also make a plan thinking that I will develop such afflictive emotions, but these afflictive emotions like anger arise. So all these faults and all these various types of negative deeds, they all arise through the power of their causes and factors, and therefore they do not have, they are powerless. Verse 26, and the coming together of all these factors is also not a result of motivation thinking that we'll come together or we will produce such amount of sufferings. So the sufferings that is generated by it also does not come by thinking that I will develop these sufferings. Now, in the case of some of the main Indian, ancient Indian philosophies, here the philosophy of Samkhya is explained, and so everything arises from their factors, and the factors in turn arises from their preceding factors. So things arise through mutual dependence, by depending on preceding causes, conditions and factors. So it is through this way that things arise. So from beginningless time, things arise by depending on many causes and factors, and it is not the case that Creator has created right from the beginning, and then later things start developing. So here the two ancient Indian philosophies' viewpoints are explained. Now, in accordance to Samkhya philosophy, they accept primal substance and say that everything is created by this primal substance. So this primal substance, which is accepted by them, and this primal substance is said to be a state where there is an equal state of darkness, courage, and dust. And that primal substance is accepted as permanent. And similarly, in accordance, similarly, they also accept a person which is permanent, independent, and independent, which is the enjoyer of happiness and suffering, experiencer of happiness and suffering. So both of these, the primal substance and the person that has been accepted by the Samkhya, they accept this as the creator of everything. So they accept that this primal substance is the creator of everything. So this primal substance, who is believed to be creator of all manifestations. However, in the case of primal substance also, it does not have the motivation thinking that I will come and I will create all other things, because the primal substance itself is accepted as permanent and so on. So if the primal substance itself is not created by forces and factors, then how could it create others? How could one which is permanent can create a fruit which is changing and impermanent? Since we see so many fruits that keeps on changing all the time, so therefore the cause for that should also be impermanent and changing. And if the cause itself is changing, then we can definitely see fruits that are also changing. However, if the cause is permanent and unchanging, the fruits should also remain unchanging. And therefore, in the case of primal substance, since itself is not produced, how could it have fruits? So therefore, where is this fruit that you think has been generated by the primal substance? And similarly, the second philosophy of the logicians, the self, which is also accepted as permanent, spotless, and all-pervading, that should also not change, that also cannot be accepted as impermanent, because they accept that that person, which is spotless and permanent, is always focused in the object. And therefore, how can it change? And in that case, the object that has also been observed by the person, that should also be accepted as unchanging. And if the self is permanent, because they, according to this logicians, they say that this self or the person is permanent as well as also conditioned, and therefore they accept that this produces fruit. However, if this person is accepted as permanent, then it should be like the space, and therefore it cannot produce fruit. And secondly, as he said in verse 30, that if that person is cannot accept. And if it is permanent, then even if it encounters factors, it cannot experience any change, because there's nothing the factors and conditions can do. So even when external factors encounter, if this person and the self remains as before, then in that case, what is the role of these factors? What is the role of these conditions? What is the effect of such factors and conditions? In that case, how could you show the relation between the factors and the person who came into contact with that factor? Because when we talk about relation, at least from Buddhist point of view, there are only two types of relations. One is relation in terms of cause-effect, and another is relation in terms of having the same nature. So in this case, if you accept the person as permanent, you can't accept any of these two possible relations. Verse 31. Now, from Buddhist point of view, all conditioned phenomena, they are in the nature of interdependent origination. And it's not only the conditioned phenomena, but they accept all phenomena as interrelated, interconnected. And this is true particularly in the case of cause-effect relationship or conditioned phenomena. All these conditioned phenomena arise not without cause, or they cannot arise from a cause which is of unsimilar nature. And with, when Buddha taught the 12 links of dependent origination, he said, because of the presence of this is produced. Because this is here, this will be there. Meaning that things can arise from their causes and factors, and the cause which is the producer of the fruit also is dependent on its preceding causes and factors. And if it is something which is not produced by causes and factors, it can't have the capacity and the power and the potential to produce fruits. So therefore, all conditioned phenomena have the capacity to produce their result. For example, in the case of the fire, when it leads, when it burns the wood, then even at the so in the case of the wood, it is a kind of a conglomeration of presence of eight substances, and depending upon the amount and the state of those eight substances, you can burn some of the wood very easily and some not so easily. So therefore, there should be a potential which is similar to the aspect of the fruit. So in this way, everything is dependent on others. Everything that brings benefit and harm to us, they all arise from causes and factors, and therefore they are overpowered or dependent on their causes and factors. Therefore, they are dependent on others, and that in turn also dependent on others. So such understandings are very useful. For example, if you get angry, in reality, the cause of angry is there are many causes for the anger, and there are so many causes and factors which are responsible for such an anger. But unfortunately, when we get angry, we are unable to see these diverse causes and factors. We pick up just one cause and blame everything on that. So in the case of all contaminated objects, which are the object of arisal of attachment and hatred, they all have different aspects. Now, for example, when you get angry or hated, you see only the ugly aspect of the object and think only of that. And when you develop desire and attachment, you pick only that aspect of the object which is attractive, which is pleasing, and you are unable to see the other aspects. So depending upon many factors, it has many levels and many aspects. It is a good aspect and the intermediary aspect or neutral aspect and the bad or negative aspect. So if you are able to see all these different aspects, it will be quite helpful to reduce attachment and hatred. Because as I said earlier, when hatred and attachment arises, you tend to pick up just one aspect of the object and then get angry or develop strong attachment and desire. On the other hand, if you see all these multifarious aspects, then you will not be able to take just one aspect and blame everything for that. And you will not then find a proper target to get angry, a proper target to develop attachment. So if you have to blame to all these aspects and not just one aspect. And therefore, one important Buddhist view and Buddhist philosophy is the philosophy of dependent origination. And this is a very important philosophy, because whether you are a follower of religion or not, even if you are someone who is antagonistic to Buddhist teaching, and if he has a good idea of the meaning of interdependent origination, then even if you remain antagonistic and would like to say bad things against Buddhism, you will be more effective. Now, if you do not have a clear idea of this multifarious aspects and the nature of interconnected reality, then even if you try to harm the Buddha's teaching, you will not be able to harm it, because your own viewpoint is very narrow and very shallow. And today, whether it's the economical situation of the world or environmental situation of the world, or the situation of the peace, or situation within the family, or situation of your own health, we suffer because we do not have a holistic aspect. When unable to see this diverse, interrelated nature and interrelated reality, and if you are able to see everything from that holistic perspective and see the interrelated and interconnected nature, then everything that you will do will be in harmony with the way things are, and without being able to lead a life in conformity with the way things are. If you try, if you make a lot of conjectures based on your whims, then you will encounter a lot of sufferings. So, since things arise from many causes and factors, and therefore it is powerless, that means depending on many factors, when a result is produced, then nobody can stop that result. Now, in the case of a conflict or a fight, the conflict, war and fight is a result of many causes and factors. And when all these causes and factors arrive and the fruit in the form of conflict and war has been produced, then there is hardly anything that you can do, because the fruit that you do not want is now powerless because of the completion of the causes. And therefore, knowing this reality, that you should be able to see everything as an apparition, as an illusion, and do not get angry towards them. So this means that if you are able to understand the interconnected reality on the level of conditioned phenomena, and then gradually you will also be able to understand the dependent level or interdependent reality of even the non-conditioned phenomena. Even in the case of permanent, it is dependent on its parts, and it is dependent on its whole, or it is dependent on the mind that gives the designation. So in this way, when you talk about not only the conditioned phenomena, but when you talk about the general and the particular, the whole and the part, then you can there also you will be able to see the interconnected reality, because in the absence of the whole, you can't talk about the parts, and in the absence of the parts, you can't present the whole. So the way things exist is such that they are very much there, but when you search, you won't find it, and without being able to find, things function. So therefore, when something that we are unable to pinpoint, but still we see their function, so that leads to the conclusion that they are just mental designations. So therefore, first of all, you understand the interdependent nature in the level of conditioned phenomena, and then interdependent nature in the level of part, dependence of the part and the whole, the reality that thing. Then furthermore, you understand the interdependent connection from the point of view that everything is designated by the mind. So it's really important to understand such interconnected reality. It's important to understand such an interconnected reality, because when things appear to us, we do not see them as having such interdependent reality, but we see them as having independent existence. So by realizing the fact that everything is like an illusion, like an apparition, that they do not have interdependent existence, you should not get angry towards all objects. Now here you must caution by saying that if all phenomena are devoid of inherent existence, and then how could the object of negation can be eliminated by a positive counterforce? Because both the object of elimination and positive counterforce doesn't have inherent existence. So therefore, how should you talk about refuting the object of negation? And this is answered by saying that yes, it is true to say that the object of negation is also like an illusion, and the positive counterforce that eliminates it is also like an apparition, it's also an illusion. But this does not mean to say that things do not exist at all. Because from that level of lack of inherent existence, they are interconnected, and therefore these sufferings arise continuously. These sufferings that we do not want arise continuously. So therefore, without doubt, we need to remove the suffering, we need to actualize happiness. So therefore, it is important that you should undertake a practice. So when we say that all phenomena are like an illusion and repression, we are not saying that the causes and effects do not interrelate to each other, that the causes do not produce the fruit and so on. There is therefore a big difference between a person in a dream and the actual person. In the case of both the person in the dream and the actual living person, both are like an illusion, both are like a dream. Whereas in the case of a person in a dream, if you see that person in the dream as an actual dream, then this will directly contradict your own experience. Whereas in the case of actual person, when you say that this actual person is the real person, there is no contradiction to your experience. So it is in this way you should also be able to see how sufferings can arise and how they can be eliminated. Verse 33. Therefore, whether it's your friends or your enemies, when you find them doing certain things that is improper, then you should again realize that such improper actions arise because of certain factors, and reflecting in this way should remain relaxed. So you should understand the interplay of countless causes and factors. If you see a fighting between two persons, there also should be able to see the many causes and factors. And in the case of a fight between two persons, it is dependent on many factors, like it is dependent on how you expressed yourself to that person and the environment where you are. And if you go even deeper, then it may also have something to do with the actions or karmas that you have accumulated in the past. And so when you in this way, that you will be able to realize the reality. So reflecting this way, you should remain in peace. Don't get immediately disturbed. And not only that, as this verse 34 says, that in the case of sufferings, so when you see your friends or enemies performing certain improper actions like harming others, you should think that such negative action or harmful action is not done out of choice. And if these things arise out of choice, then no one should be doing that, because everybody do not want suffering. And in that case, none of the sentient beings could encounter any types of sufferings. Verse 35, it explains about how to develop the practice of patience, particularly in the case when you suffer and you harmed. Because of carelessness, when your mind is afflicted by afflictive emotions, and when you do not know the long-term consequences, and when you do not know what is to be adopted and what is to be given off, then people harm themselves, like beating their fist upon their own head, and breaking their body with thorns and weapons. For example, in the pursuit of obtaining women, people get so obsessed with a particular woman that they refuse to eat, or they would strangle themselves, or they would jump from a cliff and eat poison or other unhealthy foods. So they end up doing all this unfortunate or non-meritorious actions. So in this way they harm themselves. And as verse 37 says, that when one is overpowered by afflictive emotions, one even kills oneself who one cherishes so much. So if this is the case, then how could you expect that they do not harm the body of others? So harming others is understandable, because they are influenced by afflictive emotions. So through the development of afflictive emotions, when people perform such negative actions, like even taking one's life, since they perform such actions, so to such people, even if you are unable to cultivate compassion, how is it that you get angry? And when they develop afflictive emotions, they even commit suicide. And when they develop afflictive emotions, they lose their powerless, and therefore they kill themselves or commit suicide. So seeing this, you should develop compassion. And even if you are unable to develop compassion, it is totally improper to get angry. Here Aryadeva in his 400 verses says that even if somebody gets angry, realizing that they are influenced by the afflictive emotions, and he really gives the example of someone who is sick and who is very angry. And if such a sick person, because of his illness, and first of all he has physical illness, and then secondly his mind is disturbed, and such a physically sick and mentally disturbed person fights with everybody in the hospital, then the nurses and doctors instead of getting angry with that person, they would develop more compassion and take more care of that person. So similarly, the Buddhas also identify these afflictive emotions as negative and not descendant beings. And similarly, in one of the work by Chandrakirti, he also says that it is the fault of afflictive emotions and not of the sentient beings. So therefore you should pinpoint the fault with regard to the afflictive emotions and not with the sentient beings. So therefore, when you encounter many improper deeds done by sentient beings, realize that these are the fruits of afflictive emotions. And therefore, if you want to destroy or blame, then you should blame towards these afflictive emotions and not the person who is powerless under the influence of afflictive emotions. As I said earlier, when somebody does something wrong, it is important to act against his bad deeds and bad works and not against the person. And with regard to the person, you should not lose your compassion. And this can be easily understood, because that's exactly what you do when it comes to yourself. Now, for example, sometimes you commit a negative deed, and then immediately you would say that I made a mistake and please forgive me. So you are separating yourself from the negative work that you have done. So you are not saying that the negative action, negative conduct was bad and I will stop it, and so therefore forgive me. That means you distance yourself from such negative actions. You make a distinction between yourself and the negative action, your negative action. So similarly, when someone else does certain negative actions, you should make a distinction between his negative action and the person, it's himself or herself. So that gives an opportunity for everybody to make progress and develop positive qualities. Now, when somebody brings a lot of problems, for example, conflict and so on, then you should think, as is explained in this verse 39. Now, so if somebody gets angry and picks a quarrel, then you should examine whether this is temporary or is by nature. When somebody harms others, if it is the nature of the the children or the ordinary people, then it is improper to get angry toward that person, because you will not get angry with the fire because it burns, because burning is the nature of the fire. Essence, when the fire came into existence, its nature is being able to burn others. And therefore, when the fire burns you, it is unreasonable to get angry. So if anger and so on is the nature of sentient being, then it is improper to get angry with them. And verse 40 says that if such anger and so on are temporary, and so if these faults are temporary and sentient beings themselves by nature are good and gentle, then in that case, of course, it is improper to get angry. For example, it is improper to get angry by seeing smokes covering the sky or space. Because when the space or sky is covered by smoke, at that time if you get angry with the space, then that is stupid. So likewise, you should not get angry with the person, because his afflictive emotions are temporary and he and she is by naturally good. Verse 41 says, if someone gets angry and uses a stick and hits at you, and then what directly harms your body is the stick and not the person. So if you are to get angry to what has directly hit you, then you should get angry with the stick or the bullet that directly hit your body. Now, if you are not getting angry with what has directly hit you, but the indirect causes, then in that case you should get angry not to the person, but to the anger or the afflictive emotion, which is the motivating factor. But in our case, we do not get angry with the main source, which is the anger, and we also do not get angry with the stick, which has directly hit you. And why is it you that you get angry with the middle cause, the person? Another reason is, as is explained in verse 42, that today others have harmed you. It is because of your past karmic results. And in the many past lives, you must have harmed others, and therefore today you are being harmed. So the main source is the result of your own negative action. And the result of having harmed others, as a retribution, today you are being harmed. So indirectly, it is because of your improper action that you performed in the past, and therefore you blame yourself and not the sentient being that had harmed you. And the weapon that has been used by the enemy and your own body, both are causes of the wound and the causes of the suffering. And apart from your own body, in the sense of your own body and the weapon, even though it is true to say that others have held the weapon, but you suffer because you also have this physical body. If the weapon has been thrown at a stone, the stone will not suffer. Whereas when the weapon is thrown to your body, then you suffer, and because the nature of your body is such that it is susceptible to suffering. So the cause is both the weapon and your body. So therefore, to what you will get angry. And not only that, that if you reflect on the nature of your own body, it is really like an abscess. It is like an abscess which is omitting blood and pus and. And therefore will not be able to tolerate any sufferings. So therefore it is improper to get angry only towards the external factors. And there, verse 45 says that all the sufferings that you encounter should be seen as the result of your negative actions. The ordinary children, even though do not want suffering, but they crave the causes of the suffering, and it's because of one's own shortcomings and faults that one suffers and the harm comes. So therefore, why should you get angry to others? For example, the guardians that you see in the hell realm, and the razor blade of forests that you see in the hell realm, all these are generated through your own karma. So therefore, to which object you should get angry? So one should get angry towards all negative action and not to the guardians of the hell realms. Instigated by one's own action, all these harms had arisen. And therefore, such negative actions committed by yourself is in fact responsible for the projection of other sentient beings into the hell realm. So therefore, you are actually the source of destruction of other sentient beings. Because of your earlier having accumulated negative actions, you are experiencing such harms today. And this being the case, and instigated by your own negative actions, others have harmed you, and by harming you, these other sentient beings also will suffer and they fall into hell realm. So therefore you are responsible for such sufferings and problems. So indirectly it is you who had destroyed them, who had made them suffer. Because sentient beings have committed such harms, using you as the target, using you as the object, and you become susceptible to such harms because of your past negative karmas, and it is because of your having committed such negative karmas that you become a target of harm by other sentient beings. So this really looks like that you are the one who is responsible for other sentient beings committing negative deeds. So in this way you are destroying them, you are harming them. And also it is improper to get angry towards other sentient beings, because it is independence on the sentient beings. You get an opportunity to practice patience and able to purify many types of negative deeds. Whereas in your case, in relation to yourself, other sentient beings experience much suffering and they fall into hell realms. So in short, because of being harmed by other sentient beings, you got an opportunity to practice patience. But in the case of other sentient beings, because they have harmed you, they experience the negative result of falling into hell realm. So therefore you should, instead of getting angry, you should be able to remember the kindness of these sentient beings who had given such an opportunity to practice patience. So you should get angry towards yourself rather than towards other sentient beings. And when seen from this point of view, you are actually harming others, and these harming sentient beings are benefiting you because they have become a basis for development of patience. So therefore, why wrongly you get angry towards other sentient beings? Now, if someone tries to refute this by saying, as is explained in verse 50, Now, in your case, if you even if others harm you, but if you have the quality of practicing patience, then you will not fall into hell realms. So, if you guard yourself, meaning that if you practice patience and do not harm others, and through that way, if you protect yourself, then you are guarding yourself from negative results. Then, in that case, the others will not be able to accumulate merit, because the practice of patience has been done by oneself and not by others. So all these verses are saying that how much you get benefit through such an opportunity. However, when others harm you, if you repay this by harming others, then you are not able to protect yourself by practicing patience, and you also degenerate from the degenerate from positive conduct, where the Buddha has asked you to not to harm others if others harm you, not to scold others when others scold you. So in this way, you will degenerate from the positive conducts, and therefore your conduct and discipline will degenerate. Earlier we spoke about the eight worldly dharmas, that when others praise you, you get happy, and when others say bad things, you feel unhappy. When you become famous, you get happy, and if you get bad names, you feel unhappy. So such sources of unhappiness of the mind, since your mind is not the body, no one can destroy it. When others harm you, then there are two objects of harm, that is the mind and the body. Now in the case of the body, others can harm you by using sticks or throwing weapons. However, in the case of the mind, however, in the case of using harsh speech or saying bad things, and this will not harm the mind, because mind is not body, so therefore nobody can destroy it. Therefore, so using harsh speech, so when others affront you or use harsh speech and says negative deeds, this will not harm your body. So therefore, why you the mind should get angry? Because if other defames you or uses harsh speech, this will neither prolong your life nor shorten your life. So these are much dependent on your own mental state. So if others harm your body, then of course you will not be able to tolerate. But in the case of the mind, much is dependent on your mental attitude. Now in the case of happiness, experience of happiness is suffering by the body as a physical feeling, then it is something that you directly experience. Whereas in the case of mental experience, much of the mental experiences are dependent on mental conceptual thoughts. So many of the mental unhappinesses are dependent on your mental attitude. Verse 54. Here you are saying that even though not finding wealth or saying harsh speech, this does not harm me directly, but through because of such bad reputation and so on, others will dislike me. So therefore, I'm getting angry. If you say that, then this is answered by saying that this is also stupid, because such will not be able to harm this life and harm your future lives. And you could also answer this by saying that if others use harsh speech and so on, then this will interrupt my achieving worldly gains, then this is also not a good reason. And if you say that such use of negative words and so on hinders my worldly gains, and therefore I dislike them, and this is answered by saying that whatever wealth you, this is also improper, because whatever name, fame and wealth that you get, these are only temporary benefits, something that's useful only of this life, and at the end of this life you have to give everything. But the sins and the negative deeds that you accumulate in the pursuit of fame and name, this will abide for a long time. So therefore, it is better that I die today rather than live for a long time by depending on wrong ways of livelihood. Because even if you live for a long time, finally you have to experience the sufferings of the death. So this being the reality, that it is better to die than live a long life depending on wrong livelihood. The wrong livelihood are explained in Nagarjuna's precious garland, like wrong livelihoods are hypocrisy. So wrong livelihood is first, there are different types of wrong livelihood. First is hypocrisy, in order to gain name, fame, respect or some offerings. If you lead a very hypocritic life, pretending that you possess high realization, that you possess clairvoyance, and that you can read the minds of other people and so on, these are hypocrisy. For example, you have the expect, lead a hypocritic life, thinking that how nice if many people come to me and request me for divination, or many people come to me requesting me to perform some ritual deeds, or even if you act as if you are very disciplined monk and nun, so on, that's hypocrisy. And then the second wrong livelihood, flattery, in order to get wealth. So you flatter others, and you flatter others with expectation to get some money, and you say nice words to deceive others, to make others' mind happy, and thereby to get some offering or some money. So that is, so the livelihood that get from that is called wrong livelihood. And the third is called kind of side begging. Side begging means you do not ask for something directly. You are not honest, but you, in the depth of your mind, you are expecting some good things, some wealth and something from that other people. For example, if you want a radio from somebody, and without directly requesting that person, please give me this radio, but you would indirectly say that someone has this kind of radio exactly, and this is really wonderful, you know. And then the fourth is to be very presumptuous and without shame and inhibition. If you ask somebody, give this to me, so that's wrong livelihood. And the fifth is the fifth wrong livelihood is if one of your acquaintance comes to you and give you something, and If someone has given something to you, and then later on you meet that same person, and then you again remind this person by saying that last year you gave me such and such thing, it was so useful and it was so beneficial, so you are seeking something more. So you are finding material gifts by talking about material gifts. So that's also wrong livelihood. Verse 47. The experience that you get in a dream, experiencing that you get experience, positive experience or happy experience for 100 years, and then getting up, and then there's another person who gets a short moment experience happiness in the dream and gets up. Both these experience after getting up or after when you are awake, when you are awake, and then both these experiences are same. So therefore, when you are awake, the experience that you had during 100 years or for a short time, both are just object of memory and it's of no direct benefit. So therefore, whether you, even if you live for a long life, at the time of the death, it's only an object of memory. So even if you have obtained lots of material wealth and so on through wrong livelihood, through wrong livelihood, you must have constructed a nice house and you have lot of goods inside the house. So in the beginning you may be a religious practitioner, but later on when you got an opportunity to earn a lot of wrong livelihood, including constructing a house and collecting more acquaintances and friends and attendants and so on, the more you have friends, the more you will have also enemies. And in this way, if you extend the circle, then all your, even if when you have a lot of wealth and so on, but in the end, as everything has been robbed by a robber, he will go empty-handed and naked. So therefore, even if you have obtained a lot of wealth and you are able to enjoy them for a long time, but at the time when you die, you will have to leave everything behind as if everything has been robbed by a robber. You go empty-handed and naked. As the great Kadamba masters used to say, that in the case of a genuine practitioner, you should be like a bird that flies from a rock. When a bird flies from the rock, nothing remains behind, nothing is left behind on the rock. So if you are able to lead such a life, then at the time when you die, then you do you die like a wild animal. And otherwise, if you are someone who has a lot of unnecessary accumulations in the form of wealth, then even after death, your friends and relatives might fight over your wealth. And not only you are unable to take anything when you die, and after you are gone, then many people will come. Some will say, "I am his student." Others will, "I am his followers or relatives," and all of them start fighting over your wealth. Now again you will try to defend your position by saying, as is explained in verse 60, you might again think and say, "Yeah, still I need wealth, because the more I will have wealth, this will help me maintain my health and I can live for a long time, and that will give an opportunity to purify my negative deeds and collect merits." So since I need wealth, and in order to acquire such a wealth, so even if I make some mistakes here and there, it should be okay. You might say that. So this is answered by saying that in the pursuit of wealth, if you get angry and develop attachment to some and disliking to others, then isn't this a cause for reducing your merit? And from your point of view, the reason that wealth is necessary is that you can accumulate merit. But in this process, can't you see that your merit is destroyed, your merit is reduced? So in the pursuit of wealth, you in fact not accumulate merit, but you destroy your merit. And verse 61 says, if the purpose for which you are living, in other words, this very human life is for the purpose of being able to undertake some Dharma practice and to achieve enlightenment. And instead of being able to benefit for many lives to come, but if you end up accumulating all negative actions, if you are unable to fulfill your objective for which you are living, and if you continue to commit only negative deeds, then your life is more destructive, then you are dead. So therefore, what is the use of my living? Verse 62. Now, again, if you say that by saying if bad reputation grows, and then this will harm the devotion and faith of sentient beings that like me, and therefore I get angry towards unpleasant words, and then in that case you should, why you can't get angry to those that says bad words to others? Now, again, if you say that the lack of faith is dependent on others, and therefore if you are forbearing the unpleasant words that is being said to others, then in that case you should also be able to tolerate bad words being said towards you. So this explains how to practice patience when others say bad words to you. And then the text explains about why, how you should practice patience when others say bad words to your friends, relatives, your teachers, and so on. Because we develop anger when others harm our relatives, friends, and so on. Verse 64 reads that if somebody talks badly or says bad things about the images of the Buddha, similarly stupas and Buddhist scriptures, if someone makes sarcastic remarks or says bad things, and if they destroys them, there also you should not get angry. Now, for example, in our case, the communist Chinese have exactly done that. So there also you should not get angry, because such negative deeds and destructions will not be able to harm the Buddhas. And similarly, when someone harms your Lama or your relatives, or those that are your friends or relatives, similar in the way as you acted earlier, you should be able to understand that these are dependent on a multiplicity of factors. It may be due to the actions of your relatives and friends in the past lives. So seeing all this, do not get angry. You should stop angry. Verse 66 teaches that by analyzing the nature of anger, do not get angry. Now, in the case of embodied beings or sentient beings, they are harmed by those that possess a mind, and they are also harmed by those that do not have a mind. Meaning that we are sometimes harmed by human beings or animals, and sometimes we are harmed by non-sentient beings, like the weather, changing weather. Sometimes it is very hot, sometimes very cold. So normally we do not get angry with the changing climates, however harsh they may be. Of course, there are some people who really get angry when the weather is disturbed, but generally we do not get angry. But when we are harmed by sentient beings, then we get very angry. So this is improper, and do not get angry. Verse 67, when others does something wrong, or when others harm you, some does that harm or fault, commit that fault because of ignorance and says bad words. And to this, if you also out of ignorance again gets angry to that person, then both are wrong. Then who is faultless and who is the one with the fault? And if you really do not want being harmed, then why did you perform such a negative action in your past life? Since everything is dependent on the action, therefore why is it that you get angry towards the harming sentient beings? And seeing this reality that everybody should live with mutual love and compassion, and ensure that everybody lives harmoniously with love and compassion, and therefore you should remain focused to develop such an attitude and accumulate the merit. So whenever we encounter minor hardships and problems, do not react aggressively. And then under such a situation, if you remain calm, loving, and then gradually things will change. Just as we cannot clap with just one hand. If one particular house is on fire, and then as soon as you see grasses and so on catching fire, then in order to save your house, you would extinguish those fires on the grass and so on and throw that out. So similarly, when you develop attachment and develop the fire of hatred to others, then immediately you should understand that this will burn my merit, and therefore you should immediately give them away. So just as is explained in the example, if somebody else's house is on fire, and then you see the falling of grasses burning with fire and so on, then immediately you should extinguish those fires to ensure that your house will also be not caught by fire. So similarly, when you develop attachment and hatred and so on, then you should immediately realize that this will burn and destroy your merit, and therefore abandon them. Verse 72, if a person who is to be killed is freed simply by chopping his hands off, then that person would appreciate that because still his life is saved. So similarly, today we have obtained this human life. Now, for example, in the case of the Tibetans, in around the 1959, we lost our country and came into exile. But still, since we are living with other fellow human beings, we can seek their support and we can follow their examples. So therefore, today, even if we encounter some problems and sufferings, you should realize that by encountering these sufferings, And within this human life, if you are able to purify some of the results of negative karmas in the past, in the form of experience and hardships, and through that way, if you are able to get liberated from the hell realms and so on, then instead of feeling discouraged, you should really rejoice and be happy. And if you are unable to tolerate even such minor sufferings that we experience in the life of a human being, then how could you tolerate the sufferings in the hell realm? If this is the case, then why is it not that you don't stop the anger which is the causes of such sufferings in the hell realm? Now, when we make endeavor to remove such anger, it is not easy, but it is a worthwhile project. For example, in order to fulfill one's desire and attachment, you encounter a lot of hardships, sometimes even burning yourself. And until now, you have encountered countless thousands of you have experienced sufferings for thousands of lives in the hell realm in the pursuit of fulfillment of your desire. However, you were unable to fulfill either your purpose or the purpose of ascended beings. But today, in this, on the basis of this human life, even though there are some hardships, but if you face those hardships, then there is a great opportunity to fulfill great purposes, to develop bodhicitta, and to get liberated from the sufferings of the hell. And there's also the possibilities of achieving enlightenment. So therefore, the hardship that you encounter today is a worthwhile task. And therefore, the hardships that you encounter today is not so difficult, not so harmful, and also you will fulfill great purposes, and you will be able to remove the harms of other sentient beings. So you should really appreciate this. And then, as we discussed earlier, in relation to the eight worldly dharmas, that in the case of your enemies, you feel happy when they suffer, and you feel unhappy when they are happy, and you feel unhappy when they are happy. So that's why sometimes when you see the falling of your enemy, you celebrate and you rejoice. And if the enemy becomes famous, you feel unhappy. And if you see others talking bad things about them, you feel happy. And if you see others praising them, you feel unhappy. And similarly, in your case and in the case of your relatives and friends, these are just opposite. Now, if someone praises the qualities of others, possessing qualities, for example, if someone praises the qualities of your enemies, and the one who praises the qualities of their enemies, if he gets joy and happiness, in other words, if someone praises the qualities of your enemies, then you should feel happy and do not feel unhappy. Because in the case of that person who does the praise, he feels happy. And at that time, you should also think that this is good, this is wonderful. And of course, if someone praises the bad deeds of the enemy, then of course, there is every reason not to join him. But if someone praises the good qualities of the enemy, then just as that person who makes the praise feels happy, so similarly should also feel happy. Now, from a Tibetan point of view, if something good is done by the communist Chinese and someone praises it, then you should also agree with that and say, this is wonderful. And then you reap the benefit of being able to remain happy.
Mm-hmm.
And experiencing such, developing such a joy is a pure joy and it's not a negative experience. And and this is also a wonderful way of attracting others. So this kind of appreciation of good qualities of others is a pure source of joy and without defiled by negative deeds. And this is something that is also permitted by the by those possessing qualities, meaning the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and because they have encouraged to develop such an attitude. And then even in the case of the enemy, gradually they will realize and they will see that the that person is very honest and straightforward. So because of that, not only you will be able to attract other people, but you will also be attract your enemies. And contrarily, if someone praises your enemy, and then you feel not only your enemy, but even the person who makes such praises, if you feel unhappy and unable to tolerate it, and in this way, if you do not dislike others being happy and enjoying, now this means if someone praises your enemy, then not only you dislike your enemy, but you will start also disliking the person who praises your enemy. So from this perspective, if you dislike others experiencing joy and happiness, or in other words, if you are someone who can't see others enjoying and experiencing happiness, then in that case you should give up all good deeds, like giving gifts to others or wages to the servants and so on. So if you do so, then you will degenerate from experiencing happiness in this life and happiness in the future lives. Verse 79 says, if when someone speaks of good qualities of yourself and you feel very happy and you also like others appreciating and enjoying it, and on the contrary, when you see someone praising the qualities of your enemies, then not only you do not join with others, you also feel unhappy. If you lead such a way of life, then how come that you make such a commitment of delivering all sentient beings to achieve the highest state of enlightenment? So having generated bodhicitta, which is aspiring to deliver all sentient beings to the highest state of enlightenment, this being the case, how come that when sentient beings from their own effort found some happiness, you develop disliking and you get angry? So therefore, if you are someone who really aspires to have all sentient beings achieve enlightenment, then in that case, when you see sentient beings obtain some kind of happiness in terms of having obtained food, clothing and so on, then you should really rejoice. Verse 82. Now, for example, if you have someone to whom you should take care and look after, and then with the passage of time, if that person who you have to take care of is able to take care of itself, then you should really be feel very happy. But instead of being very happy, if you feel unhappy, then that is extremely stupid. So therefore, while saying that you will help all sentient beings achieve enlightenment, and having taken such a responsibility, when these sentient beings, when they are able to achieve some minor happiness, then at that time you should rather rejoice and do not feel unhappy. Now in case if you do not like other sentient beings achieving such happiness, then how come you aspire that they all achieve enlightenment? And so therefore if you get angry to others who achieve certain wealth and success, then how could you develop such a bodhicitta? If someone finds something from some other people, or it is the wealth that is right now lying in the house of the benefactor, in both the situations, those wealths are of no direct benefit and deliverance to you. So therefore, what does it matter whether the benefactor gives something to others or not? Why you feel unhappy when it's being given to others? If you rejoice at the rejoice at the experience of happiness of others, if you rejoice others achieving peace and happiness, then that in fact is the source of collecting merit. So these qualities like merit, faith and devotion, these are the things that you are aspiring to achieve. So therefore, how come that you destroy them through anger? So therefore, without retaining the causes that is responsible for achieving peace and happiness and wealth, why you get angry with that? And out of ignorance, not only you do not repent against the negative deeds that you have done earlier, but you also feel jealous and competitive with others who have accumulated merit, saying that this is improper. We have a short break here.